You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hi, I'm Aaliyah Pierce, and I'm the only National Geographic researcher telling her ancestors' stories through spoken word poetry. When the whole point of throwing black bodies off slave ships and into sea was so nobody would find them, there is a problem when what they are trying to commemorate are people who were deliberately lost. It is not natural, and yet still the sea knows my great-great-grandfather more than I ever will. The water knows his every story, and I don't even know his real name.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper, not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. So we are talking to Aaliyah Pierce. Aaliyah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to tell me a secret, Aaliyah. I want to hear either a secret guilty pleasure of yours or one of your secret talents. Take your time.
A secret talent or guilty pleasure. I'll go with guilty pleasure. I have to admit that I love rewatching Hocus Pocus.
Oh.
I don't know if you love that movie.
Yes.
That is my absolute, like, it's my, if there was a spirit animal, that's my spirit, like, spirit movie. I love, love, love Hocus Pocus, and I will watch it, whether it's Christmas time, whether it's spring break, it doesn't matter. Hocus Pocus season all year round.
That is a great answer. My younger son's girlfriend loves Hocus Pocus, and she was up for a part in the remake. And
really?
It was like, yeah, she didn't get it, unfortunately, but she was so excited because this was this movie that she watches over and over and over and over again. So I get it. And
so we're best friends.
Yes, you're best friends already. Thank you so much for that. That was great. And my name is Laura Cathcart Robbins. This is The Only One in the Room. But I'm never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So like I said.
Yeah, just people can't help but laugh at that, can they? It's really cute.
We are talking to Aaliyah Pierce. Let me tell you about her. She is a National Geographic explorer. She is a spoken word poet and researcher who recently contributed to the National Geographic's podcast series, Into the Depths, which is funded by the National Geographic Society. Aaliyah also uses her creative work with poetry, spoken word performance, audio, and photography to examine oral storytelling and folklore traditions in carnival celebrations across the African diaspora. She has performed her spoken word poetry internationally from the UK and Trinidad Tobago to South Africa. Wow. As well as at numerous TEDx events. Her poetry has been published online and in print, including The Guardian, New York Daily News, and Caribbean Writer, to name a few. Welcome to the show, Aaliyah.
Thank you for having me here. I'm excited. And I always love when people read the bio, because yes. I would never introduce myself like that.
No, of course not.
It reminds me.
It's very impressive. It deserved to be read out loud. Before we start, tell me, how do you identify?
I identify as a child of immigrants, Black woman, Afro-Caribbean, a nature seeker, a lover, traveler. All of those things are how I identify.
Wonderful. So we kind of joked about this when we talked, because I wanted you to be the only spoken word poet in the room. Because honestly, I don't know anybody for whom poet is their primary identity. I know a lot of people who are poets as well as other things, but not that that's what they do. Storytelling has been used through generations, not only to keep our history as Black people alive, or anyone, actually, anyone's history alive, but also to inform the current generation of what's going on. And I know you come from Afro-Caribbean roots or Caribbean roots. And I also know a little bit about my family from the islands. They really value professions like doctor or engineer. Tell me why you chose this path for yourself.
Oh, I've tried every other path. That's why I keep ending up here. I think, like you said, right, in these Black spaces, right, a teacher, a doctor, a lawyer, the kind of typical, but still amazing careers that help communities and humanity itself. That is what they deem as professional. I've gone into the education field, so I am an educator as well. I have a master's of education and worked at universities currently and prior. But me as a poet is just the heart of everything that I am. And I had to learn, and my parents had to accept that I am not the greatest at math, so I will not become an engineer. My mother had to accept, I am terrified of blood. That will not be a thing. I will not be going in this field. So I think there had to be some reality checks over time. And then also me being comfortable with saying I am a poet and really holding that title and holding that name. And that took me a while, even for myself. That was a lot. That was a journey in itself. But I always came back to storytelling. I always kept coming back to it, whether it was because when I was little, we were sitting in my great aunt's apartment and I'm listening to Caribbean music on playing on the stereo, and I'm listening to them tell their stories of when they were in the islands, whatever it is, whatever was put in me, I always kept coming back to stories, and especially focusing on the Afro diasporic.
Wonderful. So you were brought on by your mentor, Tara Roberts, to do research for the Into the Depths podcast, which is wonderful. I've just this week started listening to it. Tell me about the podcast, and then I really want to hear, because I already know the answers to some of these, but I want to hear some of the most surprising things you learned during your research.
So National Geographic has created this podcast, Into the Depths. Tara Roberts, my mentor, friend, fellow artist, she brought me on, and it's following Black scuba divers across the world who are searching for buried shipwrecks from the transatlantic slave trade. And the transatlantic slave trade, for those who may not know, is when millions of enslaved Africans were kidnapped, captured, and trafficked to the Americas during the 15th to like 19th centuries. And we meet the divers on this amazing journey, marine archaeologists, descendants of those brought over on the ships. And this podcast is deeply, and Tara will reiterate it over and over again. We try to focus on the estimated 1.8 million unsung souls who perished during the Middle Passage. And I just want to say that number again, 1.8 million people who perished and 12.5 million who were brought to the Americas. So 12.5 million people who have been captured from their homes in Africa. So when we think about African Americans, Black Americans, and the necessity to understand history, one's identity and placement in this world, on this land, it is so necessary and why this podcast is so revolutionary in and of itself. But when I think of something that I learned, I mean, I learned so much that is actually, it kind of made me sad that I didn't know these things. Mm. But one piece that really took me, and I will say it every time, is the more women on board a slave ship, the more likely a revolt. The more women on board a slave ship, the more likely a revolt.
Why is that, do you think? Because that's astounding to me as well. Why do you think that was?
This amazing researcher, Dr. Rebecca Hall, dived deep into it and she came across information that women have access. And of course, with that access comes horrific and difficult situations, whether it's physical abuse, emotional abuse. I mean, it runs the gamut, but women have access. Mm-hmm. And so these women were allowed into quarters or forced into quarters that were for the captains or their crew.
Yeah.
And they were able to strategize. They were able to listen. And through that, were able to actually instill a revolt.
Amazing. I mean, it's unfathomable. The entire journey is unfathomable. But it actually, just looking at it pragmatically, that makes sense because of the access to information. And these were women who were being brought to quarters to be raped and other abuses as well, and then returned to the cargo hold below. And not everybody, I mean, I know you know so much more about this, but, you know, there were all these different tribes and languages. So you had to find people that spoke your language. And that was actually the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, because you said this in an NPR interview, and I was so struck by it. And you talked about sound being the new language of resistance, rhythm, and repetition in the slave ships, and reminding the enslaved that they were still human. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it was this academic article one of the team members found that really discussed how, because there, like you said, there were so many tribes, so many languages, so many dialects, that no one could actually communicate verbally, right? Through typical language, no one could actually communicate. So to rally a whole group of people, and you also have to remember the context of this, right? It's more of life or death.
Yes.
So I think communication is really like, this isn't okay. And I think that's sometimes what is left out of the history books, is that it seems like we, or our ancestors, Black African, the enslaved Africans at the time, or captured Africans, did not fight back. And I think it's really powerful that through sound, through beating on the wooden boards, through paying attention to how the boat sways and what can these capturers, what are they not able to do and where are they not resilient? All those things are paying attention to. So through sound, through a rhythm, because that in itself was Black soul, right? Like we call art nowadays this arts education, we call it the arts. But to those people then, it was just a part of who you are. It's just your being. And so that became a global communication, in essence.
Wow. And, you know, the only revolt that I knew about, the only mutiny, I don't even know if that's the correct word, was the Amistad. Were there a lot of revolts, and were any returned back to Africa?
Yes, there were actually several, many, many revolts. I do not have the exact number. And many folks actually did return to Africa. Interesting thing, though, just how belittled African humanity is, that if we return you to Africa, mind you, there are many countries within Africa that make up the continent, you're returning home. Liberia, for example, wasn't my home, but you think that returning me to Africa and sending me to Liberia is my home. So I think it's this really complicated and layered conversation that I think we often miss when we are discussing history, when we're discussing slavery, and just so many intricacies of the conversation.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
It is seen as this monolith, Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many countries are in Africa now. I used to know, but they've divided and changed so much. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot. It's a giant continent. I've only been to one country there. And, you know, I could have been there for a year and not seen everything.
Exactly.
So thank you for saying that. I want to know, from your point of view, the link between poetry and Black revolutions throughout the years.
Well, first and foremost, no revolution has happened without poetry, without oral tradition. And just remembering that oral tradition, poetry is the evolution. That's the child of oral tradition. But it is literally history and culture, even thinking of institutions of slavery and racism. Oral tradition, poetry was our way to maintain identity and resist. Again, we go into communication, right? But this idea of slam poetry just embeds so many pieces of like musical approaches and literary approaches. So this idea of musicality of like blues singing, right? A blues and a soul singer. Those are pieces all built into poetry. So then taking a few steps back to when we think of revolutions that have happened, we are using aspects, whether it's at the pulpit, whether it's in the streets, whether it's on a CD or a tape, whether we're thinking about rap, anything, all of those pieces incorporate aspects of poetry. And I think we're in this interesting age where poetry is really accepted in mainstream media. But when you look at the root of it, the underground medium of it, of poetry, it was incorporated in every revolutionary act. Because when we think of West Africa, the griot, which is the traveling poet, the historian of the tribe, these indigenous and Black people, that's where poetry comes from. And every revolution happened because of these historians, these storytellers, these musicians who were griots.
Yes. And then I'm thinking back to Public Enemy, which is not as far back as you were going, but Chuck D saying that, you know, rap is the CNN for our generation, for our people. And hip hop was that. That culture was that drumbeat that you were talking about on the ship. Like we could, no matter where you came from, you could hear it and you were then engaged, right? In something that was bigger than you. This is a personal question that I had while I was doing a little research on you. When I'm researching for articles or essays that I write or for the book that I just finished, it takes an emotional toll on me when I'm writing about darker periods in my own life even. How did you take care of yourself emotionally while doing this research?
Well, first and foremost, congrats on the book.
Oh, thank you.
Let's start there.
Thank you.
But taking care of myself, that's a really good question because I can dive deep. And I think folks forget that poets often enter spaces with their heart. And then on top of that, then their identities. So specifically thinking of Into the Depths, you know, I'm already walking in as a Black woman, Afro-Caribbean. So I'm already hurting, right? Because even in my day-to-day, and of course I have privileges, but in my day-to-day, I already feel so silenced. So not being able to take up space unapologetically. And that's a constant battle in which when it comes to taking care of myself, when I'm researching and doing this work, it really was about, as I said in the beginning, I'm a nature lover, nature seeker, traveler. It's almost like letting myself walk in the grass with no shoes on. I remember during the period of when I was researching, I would actually go swimming a lot because just being in the water and almost like it silences the noise in the world. And it just made me feel closer to my ancestors in some kind of odd way. And so I think a lot of it was tactile for me. It was like, what can I feel that will just will ground me again?
I love that. I mentioned that I visited one country in Africa. It was Senegal. And I came back and told Scott how many, because it's a coastal country and we were along on the coast for a while of it. And then by the rivers as well. Everybody was in the water all the time, like from 2-year-olds to 90-year-olds, everybody was in the water. And I was just so struck by that because, you know, you get the feeling like there's those jokes about Black people not swimming and blah, blah, blah here. Yeah. But the water is part of our heritage. It is the connection with the ancestors. So the journey of the Black American, as you've so beautifully illustrated, has been one of pain and trauma. Starting in those slave ships. Your poetry talks about revolt and resistance, and there's also aspects of joy in your poetry, which I love. But spoken word poetry, I feel like it's ours, like it belongs to Black Americans because it was born out of this pain. So you're sharing it with the world. How do you keep it ours, keep it authentic, but also how do you share it and guard it against it being appropriated by others?
That's a really good question, and something I actually think about a lot.
Yeah.
Because I think Black art seems to be one of the many art forms or arts that seems to always be taken.
Yes.
And
yes.
appropriated.
Yes.
And it's like, let us hold on to ours.
Thank you.
So that is something I definitely battle with, and something sometimes this world makes you feel like you cannot say. And I think my way is sometimes doing things within the poetry, whether it's the canon, whether it's the way the rhythm works, the alliteration, the references that Black folks will get. And then other folks will have to ask questions, or they may have to kind of do their own research, right? And we don't have to answer the question.
Right.
So even I started challenging myself to include patois. So like Caribbean patois within my poems, because I love when people who are Spanish speaking incorporate Spanish, and I'm like, oh, why don't we do that more? And so I've tried to challenge myself and say, well, I don't need to explain this to you. This is my culture. I'm going to do it. And if you want to research it, that's great. If you have a question, I would be open and gracious to answer, but kind of broadening the conversation. And so challenging people to accept me taking up space. And if you can't accept that, that's all right.
Yeah. I appreciate everything you just said. The book that I just finished, the copy editor came back and wanted to italicize or put into quotation marks some of my everyday language, my own voices. And I was like, no, exactly what you just said. They can go look it up if they don't understand it, but they can probably tell by the context what it means. But if they can't, they can go look it up, because it's like everything has to conform to the norm. Why? And it's not even really the norm anymore. If you look at like the landscape of America, there is no norm. So I appreciate everything you said. And we're right at the end, but I really wanted to make sure we left time for you to bless us with a poem, because I love your poetry. Was that something you can do today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. And I just wanted to say one last thing on our point that we just kind of concluded was, it's so interesting to me because art is supposed to be about transparency and authenticity and truth telling. And then there's this policing of what language is supposed to be. So it's this really, really just kind of balance of, and then maybe it's not a balance. We just need to revolutionize it, right? Just get in there. And this is who I am. But I always find that dynamic so interesting, in that you want me to truth tell, but I can't even truthfully be myself.
Yes.
You're snapping.
I am giving you snaps. Yes. Thank you. So what is the name of the poem you're going to read for us, or recite?
Yeah. The name of this poem is called USA versus Drexkia, 16th to 20th centuries. I'm just going to give a little bit of background to it. And I love this poem. It is my heart, because I wrote it during the time I was doing the research for Into the Depths. And we got into this point of thinking about how can we add Afrofuturism into the podcast. And you may see some pieces and get there. Not going to give anything away.
Okay.
But we found this great article about Drexkians. And it's kind of this world that was created by this amazing electro duo group. So I have to give them their kudos. But it's this idea of this abyss of the Atlantic Ocean that is deep beneath the waves, and it's a civilization. And the people are called Drexkians, and they live there underwater in this metropolis. And their lineage is actually from pregnant African women who were considered by their captors to be sick or disruptive, and then were thrown overboard.
Wow.
And then baby Drexkians swam from their mother's wombs and built this world under this empire underwater.
Amazing.
And so this poem is dear to me for many reasons. And here we go. USA versus Drexkia. When the whole point of throwing black bodies off slave ships and into sea was so nobody would find them, there is a problem when what they are trying to commemorate are people who were deliberately lost. It is not natural, and yet still the sea knows my great-great-grandfather more than I ever will. From the smell of his sweat to the serenade of his... The water knows his every story, and I don't even know his real name. When anger is always, at what point is that all you are? All humans share one thing in common: the need for water to survive. In the drowning, pregnant African women swallowed gallons of a new freedom. Unborn babies breathed below and birthed themselves, making ocean floor home. All humans share one thing in common: the need to survive. Black folk always swam. Black folk were burned while swimming. Black folk were redlined not to swim. Black folk don't like getting their hair wet. Black folk can swim, swim. Black folk got choice. Swim through trauma or drown. Thank you.
Ooh. Wow.
Thank you.
Oh, and that's so in line with my observation.
Mm-hmm. That's why I had to do that one.
I know you had to do that one. Wow, that is so powerful. Will you send that to me?
Absolutely.
I love it so much. I can see it. I can see the visual for it. Aaliyah, that's amazing. Black folk, thank you. Thank you.
I appreciate your exhale.
Yeah, I needed that. Did you say you were a professor up at the top of the interview?
Yes. So I work in higher education sectors, so in student affairs, but I've also taught at universities as well.
Okay. All right. what's going on with you now? What can we expect next from Aaliyah Pierce?
Definitely working on a book from my travels when I was in Trinidad and Tobago. So looking again at the carnival celebrations. So definitely a book will be coming soon.
And is that your heritage? Are you Trini?
So my mother's from Trinidad. My father's from Jamaica. So I am a true Trini Jam baby.
You are. You are really. Yes. I, like I said, I have lots of family from the island, and it is always, they are the most entertaining of my family members, for sure. And the best food.
Yes.
The best food. Oh, I bet you can throw down, huh? Can you cook?
I can cook a little something.
Oh, okay.
You know, as
okay.
long as you master a few of the dishes, I might not be my mother or my grandmother.
Right.
As long as you can get a few, I feel
confident. That's enough, so. Yes. Make roti?
Ooh, that's a whole other thing. I do not make roti. That is a skill.
It is, right?
People need to put that on the resume.
Yes. Yes. I agree. My son's a chef and he's going to cater a baby shower for one of our best friends, and she's Trini, and or that half of her is Trini, her father. And this is one of the things that he's going to practice making. So hopefully has perfected in time for the shower in July.
I love it.
Yeah. So working on a book, that's great. Tell me where people can find you.
Folks can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Aaliyah S. Pierce, AlyeahSPierce.
They can. I just found you there yesterday and followed you. So there you go. It was that easy.
Feel honored. It was that easy.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this. It was a conversation I needed to have. I needed to hear somebody reflect back to me and also give me the knowledge that you gave me, because so much of it I didn't know. If you get a chance to check out the Into the Depths podcast, it is really worth the listen. No matter how much you know, you will learn something during that, or how much you think you might know about that really just devastating period in the lives of so many. I didn't realize how many people were lost either until you told me during the passage. It was 1.8 million, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for this interview.
No, thank you. Thank you. I love these conversations, and your conversation also validated and affirmed things that I'm even thinking, and just art is hard. Mm-hmm. Art is hard, but yes. It's so freeing at the same time. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, honey, what a great episode that was.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, now let's get on with some Patreon shout-outs.
Yay.
Yeah, who do we have up first?
We have Mercedes Cusick, LMFT.
Mercedes.
Yes, Mercedes is a licensed trauma therapist and a certified EMDR therapist. Mm. This means, I know you were going to ask, right?
Oh, yeah, what does this mean?
She has had advanced training in complex and developmental trauma, and she's doing something really special called EMDR intensives.
Right, in case you didn't know, because I didn't know this.
I didn't know either.
You didn't? You had to look it up?
Yes.
EMDR stands for eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. So simply by stimulating both sides of the brain, it helps to heal the brain and desensitizes traumatic or upsetting memories.
That is so dope.
It's cool, huh?
Right? So what she's offering is a concierge curated program that's just for you. Not you, hun, but just for our listeners.
Okay. Could be just for me.
Right. So you could spend a long time in weekly therapy, but why do that when her EMDR intensives, so they range from like a half a day to several days, and they're the equivalent of, get this, 2 to 6 months of weekly therapy.
Honey, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's also been used to effectively treat a wide range of mental health problems. But I think it's important to mention that there's no need to talk extensively about disturbing experiences. And because this intensive format decreases treatment time, it also saves you considerable money in the long run.
Exactly. So if you want to start feeling better now, and why wouldn't you,
right?
The EMDR intensives are the way to go. And California residents, click the link in our show notes to find the link to Mercedes Cusick's website. Book your EMDR intensive today. That's Mercedes Cusick, LMFT, licensed trauma therapist. She's located in Woodland Hills, California. That's here in Southern California. But see our show notes for the website. It's www.mercedescusick.com.
Speaking of feeling good, what's new with the How to Do the Pot podcast?
Ah, so you're talking about previous guest Ellen Scanlon, who we love.
I am. Welcome back, Ellen. Thank you for being a Patreon.
Yes, and she has the How to Do the Pot podcast, and they are demystifying cannabis for women.
How cool is that?
And now they've just released their new Sleep 101 series, and in these short episodes, real women share how cannabis helps women fall asleep and stay asleep, and not wake up with a weed hangover.
Mm, that sounds important.
And on the regular episodes of How to Do the Pot, every week you can listen to fun, short episodes that answer all the questions women secretly Google about cannabis. How to Do the Pot shares women's personal stories and advice from the experts to help with solutions around stress, sleep, sex, and chronic pain. Did I say sex?
You did. Let's say sex again.
With the goal of helping women feel more confident in their choices about cannabis. If you're ready for practical advice about weed by women for women, listen to How to Do the Pot wherever you get your podcasts.
Next up is Cute Booty Lounge.
It is Cute Booty Lounge. Speaking of by women for women, right?
Right on.
Right. So this was a concept. Kelly Nishimoto.
Kelly's
we love
back.
Her. This mm-hmm. was born in Kelly Nishimoto's garage in 2004.
There's a great episode about that.
There is a great episode about that. And she's been a sponsor of the podcast for a long time. But in 2004, she was looking to make pants that embraced a woman's curves, right? Particularly the booty.
Mm-hmm. She did it. She nailed
it. Hence the name. But she wanted them to still be polished enough to wear out and about. So her signature, the patented scrunch booty pockets, Cute Booty Lounge is made by women and for women, just like I said before, but also right here in the USA. The company is incredible, female and minority owned. So you want to go to cutebooty.com in our show notes and order yours today. What do people always say when I wear the leggings, hon?
Cute booty.
Cute booty. Exactly. Oh, and now Kathleen Hahn, hon.
Hey, Kathleen, a fantastic friend of the show, one of my dear friends for a long time. Thank you so much for supporting our podcast.
Yes, thank you, Kathleen.
We know you're out there working really hard. Really hope that our podcasts are helping you get through your long days.
That's it. That's mm-hmm. it. Yeah. Shout out to Kathleen. Shout out
Hahn.
To Cute Booty Lounge. Shout out to How to Do the Pot podcast.
Ellen.
And Ellen Scanlon, yes. Mm-hmm. And shout out to MercedesCusick.com.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for listening. The Only One in the Room is produced by the creative genius that is Scott Slaughter and edited by the uber-talented polymath Christina Barcy and her team at Avon House Productions. Hey, you're still listening? Good. Please subscribe right now while you're thinking about it, quick, before you forget. And be sure to like and leave us a review of the show. Want to connect with some other Only One listeners? Be sure to join our private Only One in the Room Facebook group or check out Patreon on our website for exclusive content that you won't find anywhere else. And do you have an Only One in the Room story that you'd like to share? Please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.